Welcome back, everybody. This is Charles Dudley, and I'm here in the studio with my good friend, Mr. Sean Becker, and we have just spent the last several hours going through the very intensive knowledge component for The Lost Art of Value. And I hope if you're like me, you've learned a lot. You may have even gone back and listened to it a few times, taking good notes, and it's good. It's great. And it's getting ready to crank it up a notch, as they say. So, Sean, welcome back. We're excited for today. And what do you have for us?
Man, this is going to be kind of funny, but this is probably actually, of all the topics, this is actually my favorite topic. And today we're going to talk about numbers. And why numbers is so important to me is because numbers, and one of the quotes was, is pure mathematics is, in its way, the poetry of logical ideas. And that was based off of Albert Einstein's comment. And then another one was, the power of mathematics is often to change one thing into another, to change geometry into a language. And that was Marcus de Sautoy. Now, the one wonderful thing about numbers is it converts all your opinions into a specific language. And why this is so important is, I'll actually jump into what's the definition or what does a number mean? It's an mathematical value expressed by a word, a symbol, a figure. It's representing a particular quality and used in counting and making calculations and for showing order in a series or for identification. And so my definition of it is it's a mathematical value that is expressed by a word, symbol, or figure that represents a particular quality for showing the order or weight you have placed on something. So we can say that we believe something's important. We can say all these particular things, but the second a number is assigned to it, it proves where the weight is. See, we can say, oh, yeah, I believe in that more than anything. And so we go back to one of the principles we talked about in last session, which was weighted analysis. And it's a quantity or an amount. An amount to a specified figure or quantity, or mark with a number, assign a number to, typically to indicate a position in a series. And that again is still part of what a number means. But what we discussed in weighted analysis, it's taking all of your knowledge and assigning a particular weight or a percentage to. So this is where our numbers come in. And this is where the knowledge side proves your numbers. And this is where your numbers prove what you believe. And one of the things is, and we're really going to get into this in a minute, is there is only one. See, because you can say, oh, no, that's first, but only one thing can be first. And there are two ways to prove what you rated as number one. Let me look in your checkbook and let me see where you spend time. That always proves what you believe is number one. If you say that family is first, but if I look in your checkbook and I never see your family in your checkbook, then that's proof that you don't really value your family first. You can say that you value God first, but if you never show up to church, then most likely that's not an accurate statement because you never have any time for it. So you can say whatever you want, but if I look into your life and I can't see any time or money towards that particular goal, then that's proof that it's not number one. So, for example, I just run my financial statement the other day, and I was looking at it, and my giving and my charity was the highest percentage of all my other bills individually. So, you know, I got my car, I got my this bill, I've got, you know, when you go down the thing, I've got my educational expenses, and then I look at my giving, my charity, and the combination of it, and of all the bills, it's the highest percentage. That makes it number one. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody's has to be number one. What's number one is not the point. Because, see, you can have a lot of different things that you want to be first, such as family, friends, free time, God, church, children, work, money. Maybe yours is classic cars or recreational activities. Franklin Covey brings up a thing on the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, and it's a rock and a sand story. And on the large rocks, he takes the rocks and he says, okay, well, label the things that have the highest priority to you in your life. And these are larger rocks. And so he has two containers. One is about 3/4 away with sand, and the other one is about 3/4 away full with rocks. Well, if you try to stick all the big rocks on top of the sand, they never fit in one container. But if you'll take your larger priorities and deal with them first, then the sand represented the activities of daily life that just tend to fill your time. Then the sand, by its natural ability, will fill in the holes around the priorities naturally. It just does it. You don't have to force it to. It will just slide itself in there. And so the question is, what is first in your life? And it's real simple. You can say anything you want to about it, but if your time and your money don't line up to it, it's not first. And so there's only one. And see, again, that comment that I brought up at the very beginning, pure mathematics in its way is the poetry of logical ideas. So the math itself, or the other one I used, was the power of mathematics is often to change one thing into another, to change geometry into a language. Or how about to change your priorities into a specific order in which you use it by? So you can again say that that's the most important thing. Now, I was trying to teach my son Cameron this several years ago, about whatever you love the most is first. And see, this principle is involved in all the topics that we're going to talk about, knowledge, numbers, people, time, and influence, because at any given point in time, you're going to have to decide which one is first. So it's not wrong for one to take a precedent over another for a period, but you want to make sure you're watching which one is the first most of the time. And so if you don't know what they are and you're not paying attention to what they are and you're not paying attention to the actual influences or effects that they have on you or your relationships or how you address things or look at things, then that's where we had brought in the first introduction section that there has to be balance. Well, if you go back and you say, okay, well, what's been first? Well, my work always wins over my family. Well, now you're not valuing people. And so you'll fall short in your relationships or your influence with people because all you ever did was manage to spend a bunch of time at work. And not that I've digressed, but that comment about my son, I was really trying to teach my kids about whatever you love the most is first. And so kids have this unique ability to put things in terms that we don't always want to agree with back at us. And so my son says, okay, so if I'm understanding this properly then that means that you love smoking more than you love me. Well, I could try to be super spiritual or explain, well, you know, maybe it's an addiction or maybe it's this or maybe it's that. Maybe I could just simply say, you know, you're right. I do love smoking more than I do you. Because if I loved you more than smoking, then I would quit smoking so that I could spend more time with you. But see, smoking was first. Why? Because of addictions and all these other reasons. But really, it was that there's only one. And so I had to go back to the fact, and of course I quit a year later with some help, and because I decided that again, something else needed to be first. And this one principle will always check you. it will always come back to you and go, you're saying that that's important to you, but where's it at? If it's number 20, it's not real important to you. And so the wonderful thing about a number, a wonderful thing about that weighted analysis, that knowledge, is that when you come back, it assigns a numeric value to what you actually believe. So if you ever miss it, you get to go back and look at what did you assign your numbers to. See, this is why numbers are important to me. This is why it has such a prominent value, a prominent section, and personally in my attitudes and my ability and my knowledge and all these things, is because I realize there's only one one. And so you can say whatever you want, but if I only get to label 1 to 100 one time, I only get one one. And so I get to decide what that priority is. I can make it clear. This is especially useful in companies when forecasting your vision. Because again, if you have a specific mission, you only got one real mission. Now you might have secondary parts to that mission that you want to go with, but you really only got one. And if you don't know what that is, there's a problem. Because you only have one one.
Hey, this is really awesome, Sean. And you've already said several profound things, but the thing that hit me here is, number one, and I know you're getting into it today, is you don't know what you don't know until you measure it. And so the numbers component, what you're talking about, we can measure all kinds of things, whether it's your relationships, your money, your career success, your influence, any of that. The other thing is, in business, we used to always say, you can only expect what you inspect. And it's the same thing. You got to measure what you want to improve. And that was the big thing for me, guys, is regardless of what is number one in reality to somebody today, whoever's listening, you know, they might say, hey, I value smoking over my kid today. That is what it is now. And what Sean is telling us, and he's going to explain to us, is how we can actually impact it and make a change. Once you know what it is, you can tell, you can define what number one is in your life. Just change a few things.
And one of the things is there is only one one. But the question is, now that you have realized what it is, what are you going to do with it? Because sometimes you realize you're one one. Is that cigarette? Maybe you don't want to smoke. Maybe you like a specific kind, and it's absolutely your favorite thing. I know I've got several friends that they love exquisite cigars, and they will pay $150 for a cigar because that is a one-one thing to them. They really love it above any other thing. Maybe your one-one is, again, that classic car. Maybe you just love classic cars, and you love to do it. You love to play with them. I mean, I just met a guy the other day. He had doing an appraisal on his house, and he had six garages. And really, the house was not that much of a house. It was a $200,000 house. But he's got six garages, and he's got $350,000 of cars in them. Why? Because he loves cars. That's his number one passion, has been for the last 60 years. Went and done another appraisal for a guy out in Surrey one time. This is about 10 years ago. And I go out and do the appraisal, and he has a 3,000 square foot hangar. And I go back there, and it's climate controlled and air sealed and all these kind of things. And I asked him, I said, he said, you just got to come check it out. I said, well, what's out there? He said, it's not even part of the appraisal. He said, I just want you to come look at it. I said, I can do that. And so he had built a pool that really its value and use was substantially lower than what the appraisal would have brought to it, just like we talked about in the last session. But he said the reason why he done it is because, one, he liked the feel of marble on his feet. So he put marble around the pool because he enjoyed the feel of marble. not because it actually added any value to his house. It did in quality to some degree, but he paid $75,000 and it probably only attributed about $30,000 at the time. So that's a significant loss in value. But the whole reason why he bought the house was two reasons. One, because he wanted the hangar bay. And number two was because it was centrally located to all of his grandkids. And he had 14 of them. And so it was a big deal to him, but he said, hey, why don't you come out to my hangar? I said, okay, not a problem. He said, it's not part of the appraisal. He said, but I want you to come out and look real quick. So I go out there and I walk through basically a airlock that he had set up because it was dust and climate controlled 100% so that there no dust could go into the room. And then he had a mechanic shop and room and all this other stuff. So we go into it and he's got 50 Corvettes that he had been collecting for the last 50 years. And apparently he had owned several businesses and he was a fairly wealthy man, which would match with the book, The Millionaire Next Door, because based on actually seeing the man, he didn't look like a wealthy man until, of course, you walk into his hangar. And so you go back into the hangar and he's got 50 Corvettes. And so I'm talking to him during the conversation and I find out that he does a refinance for home equity every year. I said, well, why would you do that? He said, well, I can buy a Corvette, he said, and I could put the $50,000 on my house, he said, and write off the interest because it's against my house, but you can't write it off if you buy a car. He said, so I go ahead and pull an equity line out on my house every year, he said, but then I pay it off every year, he said, because the interest rate is better on my house than it is on my car. He said, so I get to buy it, plus I get to write all the stuff off. He said, so it's a tax write-off. He said, so again, this is just playing the numbers. See, so a wealthy man knows that, hey, I can save thousands of dollars by doing it this way. And so where you would spend $1,000 to do it, he realizes I can save three. So it's really just a numbers game to support something that's first. Because he decided I'm going to buy a car every year until I die. He said, it's something I love to do. He said, I always buy the collector's edition Corvette. He said, I drive it for 1 year. I park it. He said, never to be driven again. He said, I've been doing that for the last 50 years. And he has a full-time mechanic to take care of all of them just for his personal entertainment. But the question is, I don't care what your first is. The question is, do you know what your first is? Because you can't change your first till you know what it is. The next thing is we talked about time and money. Where is your time and your money? So you technically only have a certain amount of time every day. You have 24 hours in a day. So the question is, what's first? Is it your family? You say family's first, but is the first thing that you do when you get up your family? Now, this is something I've had to work on because we say it's first, but then we get up and, or we don't want to get up, and then when we do get up, we got to rush out of the door, and our priority is actually work, not our family. And so our work is first, not our family, and then we wonder why we're successful at work, and yet our families are failing. Because work is first, not our family. And see, again, I don't have a problem with working. Most of the time I work 40 to 60 hours a week, in a lot of cases for the last 7 years, other than this year. I took kind of a rest year this year, but the previous years before that I worked between 60 and 90 hours a week. Now it says 80% of all millionaires work 50 plus hours a week. 50 plus hours a week. 80% of all millionaires. Now, just off of a basis of biblical numerology, or not biblical numerology, but God said that you rest on the seventh. Well, even in the Bible, it said that you were to work 6 days. Now, the days of that time were 12-hour days. So they completely rested on one whole day, but they did more in 6 days than we do in 2 weeks. So wonder why some of the wealth concepts have been lost is because lots of people won't get up. Now, here's another thought for you, is that they say 80% of all wealth is obtained by what you do in your free time. So, the question is, if you work 40 hours a week, and 80% of your wealth is obtained in your free time, but you never do anything besides watch some TV with your free time, and we're going to talk about that in time session, but right now we're going to address it in numbers, because we got to say what is first is always number one. And so the way to check that is where your time and your money goes. So when we talk about it in time, we're going to talk about what you're doing with your time and how that your time can positively affect your checkbook. So, but again, you have 24 hours in a day. So if you have 24 hours in a day, what are you doing with it? How much knowledge are you trying to accumulate? How many people are you spending time with? What are you doing with your time? How's that affecting your influence? Because see, numbers puts, again, what you believe into a mathematical formula. It proves that you believe that. Because if you can't put a number beside what you believe, you don't believe it yet. Well, you know, well, I kind of believe that. Okay, well, how strongly? Well, you know, I just believe. Well, do you believe it like 90%? Well, no, I wouldn't say that high. Well, how high? Well, I strongly believe it. 50%? Well, I don't know. See, because the second you start assigning a specific number to it, it starts proving what you really believe. And so this is a part of, in a sense, the numbers game, and we're going to get into a lot of different sides of this. But when you understand what you're assigning, what you're weighting it, how much weight you're giving to it, one, it starts becoming trackable what you're weighting. For example, if you're a leader in a particular organization and you're doing things, and you say, well, I really believe that this is the way you're supposed to address a problem. Well, how high are you weighting it? How high are you weighting your resolution towards that problem and that your way is the right way? Well, you say, okay, man, I 100% believe this is the right way. Well, if that situation fails 10 times, then you might want to drop your percentage on how much you believe that's the right way. You might want to say, okay, well, you know, that's only worked about 50% of the time. Well, if it's only worked 50% of the time, well, I've got an issue because now I got 50 and 50. It worked 50% of the time, and it didn't work 50% of the time. So I might want to change my percentage of how much I believe that. Okay, so if I start realizing, okay, well, it hasn't worked that many times, well, I might add some additional knowledge or influence or time or some people to that particular thing, and then I might get back to 100%. But now that I've gotten back to 100%, I realize that the other one wasn't as accurate anymore. So my firm belief that it's 100% right isn't accurate. Now I say with this, this, and this, it'll work 100% of the time. See, that's where I come back on a lot of this information, is because one of the things I said is I had to prove to me it worked or that it failed. See, so, and I had to prove to myself this works every time. Remember, one of the original comments I made was that I can trace your success or your failure to a specific instruction you chose to follow or not follow. There was something that you needed to know. So in other words, I have to be able to trace my ability for this to help me. Which means you have to actually run some numbers. So when I go through a situation, I think back, okay, did I really value knowledge in that particular thing? And it can be, you know, counseling, marriage counseling. It can be physical, economical, sociology. it doesn't really matter. Did I value the knowledge? Well, if I didn't value the knowledge, I realized that's the first thing I didn't value. That's why it didn't work for me. You know, and again, you can do this from a forecasting perspective, which we talked about. In other words, I can determine what my outcome is going to be on the front end because I can determine how I'm going to weight particular information on the front end. Or I can get to the end of it and see how it worked or didn't work and then look back in a retrospective perspective and go, okay, well, that didn't work, but how did I rate it? But it's never because this doesn't work. This always worked. The question is, what perspective, what type of side were you looking at it from? It's not, does this work or not work? It's, what side did you look at it from? Did you look at it in a frontal side headed towards it? Or did you look at it from, again, a forecasting side or a retrospective side? Did you decide after you got through it, okay, well, now let me look back and see how it worked out. And I'm not saying that you can't do that, because sometimes life just requires you to make some decisions as you're going, and then you get to the other side of it, and you look back and go, okay, yeah, I missed it here. I didn't value this. I should have valued this. I really wanted to do it this way, and I didn't. And you can still learn on the back end. Robert Kiyosaki made the comment in one of his books. He said, there's magic in a mistake. He said, and whoever can make the most mistakes makes the most money if they'll learn from them. And so the question is not, are you going to make a mistake? It's what are you going to learn from the mistake, and how you value the mistake is either a positive or a negative. And one of the comments I saw on a Facebook post not too long ago, and I don't know who it was from, but it says, whether I win or fail, I learn, so I always win. And so the thought is not, are you always going to get this perfectly right? Because sometimes you will value a thing, you'll weight it very highly, and you'll find out you missed it. But you can go back and say, okay, this is why I missed it. This is where I valued it. This is what percentage of priority I thought it should have. And not that it's bad or good, it's that you can learn from what you did. And so, that being said, make sure that you realize there is still only one. And if you're not paying attention to how you rated things, then they can sneak up on you and you'll be surprised of the result.
This is good training so far, folks. One of the things I thought about, Sean, when you said there's only one, something that came to my mind is when people do things for the first time. I thought about that when we talked about this before. You know, a lot of people are scared because they don't know what's ahead. Kind of like you're talking about. You have a belief or you have a goal, and you may not have a track record initially. So you say you have to make some kind of decision to start. So when people take that first step or do something for the very first time that they've never done or they don't have knowledge of at the time, you know, I don't know how you would weight that. Would you weight it 100% or zero? But point being is, you start. Everybody has to start somewhere. And then, I know you like Jim Rohn. I like Jim Rohn. He always says, you maybe on sales example, you might be a 20% closing rate. I might be 5. I can still beat you. The only difference would be is I will have to outwork you.
Yep.
And the other side of that is, over time, whether it's sales or any other field, whatever you're in, the person who continues to work the numbers, make the adjustments, improves their percentage. So you can influence those numbers just by sheer brute force. learning from other people's knowledge and wisdom and mistakes and successes with counseling and things like that. There's just so many ways that I think people need to really realize is the knowing of your numbers, the measuring of your numbers is only the beginning. And then learning the tools, which I believe we're learning in this entire seminar, is how to change the numbers in your favor.
And one of the things on this side of it, based off of his comment, he said, if you've never done it before, it's your first time. So how do you have a first on your first? But see, one of the things I've learned in a lot of different ventures is really first is a misperception. There's really not really a first. There's not really ever a last either. For example, how can you have a first? You say, well, that's the first time I've ever spoke in public, is it? So you've never stood in front of three people? See, lots of times things are so progressive on such a small level that you fail to realize it's actually not a first. You say, well, that's my first business I've ever launched. Well, what made you ever believe you could have a business to begin with? Oh, because, well, I used to sell some ice cream cookies on the side 10 years ago, so you had a business. Oh, so that's right. You didn't really realize it was a business. And see, what tends to happen is that we run up on it. Like first time you had me come up in front of a seminar talking to a bunch of people. Well, that was my first time standing in front of a seminar talking to people, but I had done 4,000 houses at that time talking to a bunch of random people. So it's not really that it was my first, yet it was my first. And when we realize that first is really a issue of perspective, because see, I've ever stood up and talked to one, I've stood up and talked to 10,000. The question is, did I speak to them individually or as a whole?
I used to always love it when people told me, I really don't like to sell things. I used to do a lot of sales training years ago. And I said, well, when you were a baby, did you convince your mom to feed you a bottle when you were hungry? And that's the beginning of a salesperson right there. The other thought that I had too, the percentages that you were talking about, whether it's 50% success or 75, 80% success, 100%, zero. Again, some of these mentors and trainers and things that we've been introduced to, Robert Kiyosaki, who we like a lot, he says, I know that 1 out of 10 of my businesses are going to succeed. And 1 out of 10 might break even. And generally speaking, 7 or 8 out of 10 are just not going to make it. But he knows the success of the one is so much greater than the losses of the other 8 combined. And so the other component, I think, for people or perspective, as you like to say, that people need to look at is what determines an acceptable percentage or an acceptable success rate. Because certain things, we used to do this in the manufacturing world, and they call it Six Sigma. It's a manufacturing process improvement methodology. And Six Sigma has to do with the percentage of failure, how many times removed from failure. An example would be it's a 1 out of like 1 million is what a Six Sigma is. If you're flying on a plane, what kind of success rate are you expecting as a customer? I don't want to be the 1 out of 1 million that doesn't succeed, right?
Right.
You're in a hospital, and you're a patient. How many patients are in hospitals on a regular basis? I don't want to be the 1 out of 1 million that's failing. So certain industries, just like automobiles, all these areas, there are certain expectations, higher levels of percentages, that you cannot fail. But to Robert Kiyosaki's point, as an entrepreneur, the one that wins is the one that never quits. So am I okay, like you were saying, with making the mistakes and having some failures under my belt, learning from those, knowing when I hit the one that succeeds and takes off, it will more than compensate for the ones that I didn't succeed at. And I don't think it's a hard and fast number. I think the percentage is relative to the industry and to the situation. But people need to wake up and open their eyes to be aware of it.
And on this side of it, one of the things that really helped me on this is, why sometimes is it only 2 out of 8 companies that were successful? Why? What was their value systems? So if I can change your statistics, see, this is the whole R&D side of so many of these companies.
All right. So here's the thing. So let's say your current numbers, you succeed 1 out of 10.
Okay. So we have a 10% success rate.
And after learning the value systems, learning how to make the adjustments, you improve that to 2 out of 10.
Okay.
That's a 100% improvement.
Yep.
If your current rate is 2 out of 10, and we improve it to 3,
that's a
50% improvement. That's what people need to realize, is how powerful just a small improvement can be to
And what most companies, at. Most companies run off of 3% margins. 3%. And so if I can change your value system just 1%, 2%, 3% on a $20 million company, what's that number a year for you? What's this for in your personal bank account? You're making $2,000. What if I can change that just 10% a month for you?
I got to share a story. I have to share a story on this. And Sean and I talked about this session beforehand because we're both kind of numbers geeks. But my last year as a traditional W-2 employee, before I started my own business, now I have held down some W-2 jobs since that, but up until that time I had never been a solo entrepreneur, if you will. So I had done some things on the side, but I just had never cut the umbilical cord. So that year was 2007. The company that I was working for, I was doing great, and I had been there 5 years. And I got a raise and a promotion. The total was not quite, let me think a minute. It was 8.9%. 8.9%. Now, I don't know my exact salary at that time, and that's not the purpose of this. But for numbers' sake, let's just say my salary was $40,000 a year at that time. An 8.9% raise is less than $4,000 in the whole year. I got an 8.9% raise. It was like $3,800 or $3,600. That's a raise and a promotion in corporate America, because it was like 4%. Annual increase, 3 or 4%, and then another 4.9% for the promotion. Here's my point. That same year, I had just, maybe the end of the year before, but really that year, 2007, I just really started getting active consistently on doing real estate. And my wife told me she would not let me leave my job. When I did my first deal, made money, she's like, "That's great. I need to see you can do it more than once so it's not a fluke." I did it again. She said, "Okay, that's great. Now you've proven you can do it more than once. I need to know you can do it consistently to basically draw a paycheck just like you do at your job." And that's what happened in 2007. Well, that year, the raises came out in March, reviews, and I had already earned $30,000 in 3 months. So when I get my last check and the last real estate transaction I had done was like $7,500, which is a small check. So here I worked all the year before and the 5 years previously to get to this place where I'm getting a raise and promotion, 8.9%, less than $4,000 for a whole year. And my last real estate transaction was $7,500. I made over $30,000 in the first 3 months of that year just in real estate part-time. So I just told my boss, I said, look, boss, I'm happy to have this and I appreciate everything, but I can no longer afford to work here. It's costing me money. So I stayed. I worked 10 weeks on a two-week notice, and that year our business grossed over $500,000-$600,000. That was the business income. So I think the point of it is I could have been excited on the 8.9% raise and promotion, but I realized the potential with what I had in my other hand ended up being 10, 20 times better than what I was currently doing.
This brings us to our next topic, which is I call the numbers game. So it's all about numbers sometimes. And not to be hard or rash or mean, but there's only one. And so if there's only one, you have to play the numbers. Okay, so this is one, this is two, this is three. Well, if I do number four, it'll give me more time with number two. And so whatever your numbers are, you can play with it so that you get to keep your number one at one. And it doesn't matter what the one is, in my opinion. That's none of my business. I'm not your judge, jury, or verdict. I don't care. That's not my point. My point is, what is your one, and how did you decide you're going to keep it? And if you don't like what your one is, then change it. And you can change it by understanding it's a numbers game. And again, Jim Rowe, he makes the comment, you don't get paid for the hour, you get paid for what you bring to the hour. Well, the realization that if you get paid for what you bring to the hour, then I can change what I bring to the hour. And you will only do that based off of if you value something different than what you used to value. And if others value you different, they'll pay you more. So again, it's still a numbers game. So sometimes you have to just learn the numbers game. Now, see, numbers have their own value. And I'm going to use this just for general purposes, but it'll kind of prove the point, is biblical numerology. And I'm going to just do a couple of these. But number 7 is the number for perfection. Number 4 is earth realm. Number 12 is divine government. Number 3 is unity for Father, Son, Holy Spirit. Number 6 is the number of man. So that's just very simple. But then you have something called the value of combined numbers. And this is where it gets interesting. And we're really going to get into this section a lot because this is actually where people miss it the most, is combining numbers. For example, and we'll use it on the biblical side at first, is 666 was the mark of the beast, which is man's version of God, which is Trinity. See, 3, which was unity. So 666 was the combination. It's 3 of man. So that's all that means. Here's another one. 4 times 3 is 12. So number 3 being unity, number 4 being earth government or earth realm and government. So 3 and 4 is 12, which is divine government. See, the numbers or the combination of numbers have a particular effect. So here's another one. 12 times 10 is 120. 10 is the number of covenant or tithes. 12 is the number of divine government. 120 is the amount of years God promised man. So with his divine government and covenant, he promised you 120 years. So these are all the combination of numbers. See, these numbers have meanings. Now, the question is, okay, well, how does that apply to everything else? Okay, so Bill Gates, for example, he took and made the computer board. Well, one of the illustrations I've done in one of my first seminars is I brought up some basic raw materials. I had some molten metal. I had just a plastic circuit board. I had Bill Gates standing there with a brain sitting beside him. And I said, how much is each one of, and then I had some copper wire sitting to the side. And then I had a couple of transistors sitting over to another side. All in digital thing. I said, well, how much are each one of these worth? And everybody could say, well, you know, copper is $3 a ounce or, you know, whatever the case is, and the human brain is worth X amount. And well, he combined all those materials together to make a computer. How much is he worth now? See, numbers have a combination too. Lots of times companies don't get paid for what service they provide as much as they get paid for fixing from customer to service. So you don't actually get paid for the service as much as you get paid for the connection of the person from the product to the service. The service is a byproduct of the transaction. One of the things you taught years ago at a particular company you were working for is people get paid for the movement of money. And one guy said this is currency is like current. It's always moving. And so if you do not figure out how to manage your money will manage you for you. So it's always moving. So if you don't learn how to combine these numbers to use them to your benefit, then by default, they'll work against you. For example, I can have $1 million. And if I times it times nothing, it's still zero. And actually, $1 million times nothing that keeps increasing itself is actually no money at all. You say, no, I got $1 million. No, it's not. You have $1 million times zero, which is life, which is called inflation, taxes, fees, bank charges, etc. Your $1 million will run out without you doing anything to it. It just goes away. Why? Because it's not combining against anything. It has no combination. But if I do $1 million times 1.1, now I'm making money. It could be the smallest of a fraction. But if I will have some form of a fraction, something to combine it with, it now begins to multiply, and now I'm making money. Now I'm doing something with it. So the question is, what are you doing? And lots of times we get to set our multiplication. So on the next, and I'll come back to that in some more detail. The value of multiply negative numbers. I was talking about how to multiply something means that you get to set your percentage. Well, two negative numbers equal a positive number. And so I thought of a cute little analogy. So you take a bunch of negative people, and they fight a negative army, and they destroy each other, it's still positive. Why? Because now both the negative people are gone. Well, in a different scenario, if the worst of the two are destroyed, it's still positive. Because now the negative killed the negative army, the bad people, and so now even though they're negative, the really bad people are gone, so it's still positive. Then the other side is, well, if they both become neutral because they don't want to fight, it's still positive. And Franklin Covey is win-win, win-win. So if the question is, just because you are not big or positive does not mean you can't end up with a positive result. Sometimes a negative personality, which I've been known to have a negative personality on certain things in life, but you can take my personality, and one of the sides of my personality is I have learned how to work around problems. Because I always look for the bad outcome before it comes, and so I've learned to maneuver myself away the problem before I get to the problem because of a negative perspective. But I have to even put a percentage, let's go put a number to my negativity. So I'll say, okay, well, Sean, you're being overly negative here. You're giving it an 80% fail rate. That's not really a logical conclusion to this particular scenario. You know, well, we're driving down to the store to get some ice cream. You know, there's a You know, I mean, we could get in a wreck, we could this, we could that, you know. Okay, yeah, let's go back to some numbers. There's like a 0.016% chance of me, well, okay, so me knowing that there's some negativity in there, okay, well, let me not speed. Let me use my blinkers. Just, again, some basic things. But I can take that negative part of me and still turn it out to a positive. So I obey the speed limit. I don't drive too fast. I watch for stupid people. Maybe I don't go during rush hour. Again, I can take some of those negative traits and still turn it to where I end up with a positive result every single time.
That's funny. My parents are like that sometimes. anyways, what I was just thinking here, one of our good friends, AJ, you know who that is. We used to talk a lot years ago, and he used to always say, the biggest redeeming quality for myself, and I see that as well with Sean a lot, is I know you'll always do well is because you're always teachable. So it doesn't mean you don't make some mistakes. It doesn't mean you don't have your own issues. But as long as you're willing to learn and be humble, you can know a lot. And one of the things Sean will tell you, and I'll tell you, the more you know, the more you know you don't know.
Yep.
So actually, sometimes learning a lot is even a more humbling experience. But the key is you're teachable and you're coachable. So the other thought with this is sometimes you have to get to ground zero before you can build up. Sometimes you're so far in the hole. It could be financially, emotionally, your background, your upbringing, your environment. Sometimes it's literally getting to a place of zero to get to a positive. And so that's kind of what I see you talking about with being less negative is still better. It's still an improvement. And your situation does not necessarily define who you are or where you're going to ultimately end up. So I would like you to somehow introduce what you said earlier to me about, you know, don't apologize for where you're at, because just like our pastor tells us on Sunday mornings, he can tell you're doing good just because you're better tomorrow, you're better today than you were yesterday, you're better tomorrow than you were today.
One of the improvements, and based on your comment, one of the things that really kind of got me on this whole path is I had to go through a bankruptcy. Well, the reason why I had to go through a bankruptcy was because I was making $1,400 a month, but I was going $2,000 a hole in, or going into debt $2,000 a month more than what I was making. Well, zero was awesome. If I could have just, and so then I went from $1,200 to $3,300, and I was still like $1,000 a month in the hole. I mean, that's a bad scenario. I don't care who you are. And so in 24 months, I went $24,000 in debt. $24,000 in debt in 12 months. Well, that's a problem. You know, and again, why? Because I was breaking all these rules. And that was the point. I wasn't valuing letting my money work for me. Matter of fact, this is kind of a give me. It's a thought that I had the other day. Is we all know the phrase, money is a tool. And we're going to get into this on the next CD. But if money is a tool, the tool has a battery, and are you misusing the battery life? It's not that the tool's bad. It's that you didn't use the battery for where it could have been most productive, and so therefore it doesn't have the positive impact you would like it to because you misused the battery. And Robert Kiyosaki makes the thing, he says, you always pay yourself first. See, again, there has to be one. See, it doesn't change this principle. And so one of the things that I put on here to talk about was I was talking to a friend of mine. And this is over the last 3-4 years now. But this whole scenario actually has just kind of come to a close. And so this is really good news. And of course, I asked him permission to put it on the CD. But he had bought a property in Myrtle Beach for $93,000. And he just sold it for $125,000. And so that is a $32,000 profit? Yep. So that's $32,000. But that doesn't include the fact of that he rented it for 3 years while he bought another property in the area. He bought the other property for $51,000 and just sold it for $60,000. You think, well, that's not much money. It's only $9,000. Well, he put $4,000 in it, so that's his cost. Okay, so that means that he only made $5,000 profit. How many would be happy with making $5,000 in 13 months? But here's the interesting thing. That doesn't include the fact of that he lived in it for 13 months. So he lives in it for 13 months. He gets to sell it for $5,000 profit, which means he lived in it for free for 13 months, which is an additional $7,800. These are multiply numbers. How many times can I live in my life if I never pay rent? How much money, how much wealth can I accumulate if I never pay rent? Now, back to the other properties. So these are two properties he did. The first one he owned 3 years. The other one he owned 13 months. So he made, $12,800 in 13 months on one property that he lived in. So he got to use it. See, this is not that you don't get to enjoy things in life and you just don't get to ever have any fun and it's going to cost you so much and life's going to be so boring and you're never going to have anything fun. No. This is the opposite. He's living at the beach, having a good time, and gets to rotate between two beach properties. Oh my goodness, what a horrible life. Okay? Now, is he doing some other work? Sure. Okay, so he bought the property for $93,000. He puts $3,500 into the property. Okay, and so that reduces his income, I think, to what, 28,500. So it reduces his income to $28,500 on the property. However, he rented it out, and he rented it out for approximately $22,000 a year for 3 years in a row, time all expenses and associations and all that other stuff. He made $11,000 profit per year. So he made an additional $33,000. So he owns a property for 3 years, and he makes $61,500 off of it. Tell me that that's not a good return on investment. So how many people have made, 74,000. How many people have made 74,000 in 3 years? All right. How much did you make this year? How much would 12,800 have helped your checkbook out this year? Just this year. Much less the other 61,000, which was $11,000 a year. Did that help your checkbook any? I mean, an extra $1,000 a month, I mean, that helps my checkbook. So, again, this is just a numbers game, guys. This always works. So how many times do I have to do this in a lifetime to be debt-free? Say I do own a $500,000 house. I only have to do this 6 or 7 times over 30 years. See, I'm not a get-rich guy. This seminar is not to get rich. This is let me change your life and the money will come. It's a byproduct of this. It works every time. And so that brings me to my next story. And one of the first seminars I taught the first thing I taught was really a simple thing. Would you rather have a penny today that doubles every day for 30 days or $1 million today? So would you rather have a penny that doubles every day for 30 days or $1 million today? And it's a 50-50 response. 50% of the time, people say, I'd rather have the million. The other 50% of the time, they'll say the penny. But what I always ask is, are you guessing? And 25% of that time, they say yes. So they never actually bothered to figure out if it works or not. And just very simply, I'll tell you the beginning and the end. So the $1 million a day is $1 million today. The penny that doubles every day for 30 days is $10,737,418.24 in 30 days. Now, day one is 2 cents. Day two is 4. Day three is 8. Day four is 16. Day five is 32. And I'm going to just kind of skip down to give some points of reference. On day 10, we're at $10.24. Man, we're millionaires now. Day 15, though, is $327. You can almost buy groceries for that month. On day 20, it's $10,485.76. Now we're getting somewhere. Now I'm starting to see some income off of me being patient. Day 25, though, is $335,544.32. Now, this is what I've seen in my own personal life and with those around us. About day 25, life is comfortable. And people check out. They say, man, $335,000? That would put $100,000 in retirement. That put $200,000 just paid off. And I could maybe make it until I died. Maybe. But on day 30, it's $10,737,418.24. Here's the key. And this is just something that really just kind of got all over me in a mental perspective, is 50% of the money is earned in the last day. 50% of all the wealth. See, this is a numbers game, guys. Can you not touch what's working for you long enough that it can produce more than you're spending? See, here's something I was telling my son last night, just as a kind of an epiphany when I was re-looking at this, because I'm going to get on a different side of this in a second. But one of the reasons why people stay in poverty is because they're spending more than what they're bringing in. And so they start getting enough in to cover their living. And so what do? They raise their living. But if I'll allow my income to keep doubling in just a short amount of time, it is now more than what I can spend for my living. And I can increase my living, and it still doesn't affect my investment from doubling. The next thing is that 75% of the value is learned in the last 2 days. So when you're almost done, then 75% of all your wealth is earned in the last days. And so 97% is earned in the last 5 days. So if 97% of all your wealth is earned in the last 5 days, and 5 days represents the typical small business that only stays in business for 5 years, and most of them quit at year 4, what was the $10 million mark you quit on your last day? because they got comfortable on the back end and says, hey, this is good, but it's not quite getting me where I want to, because really we're at day 25 where it's $335,544, and it's just enough that we're comfortable in life, but it's not enough that I can go over the top and have abundancy for every good work, for all sufficiency, every single time. So, because we didn't make it the last 5 days. And so the question is, and we're going to get into this in the time chapter, but if the penny represents 1 second of your time, what are you doing with your time? And that's it for today.
That's awesome. All right, guys, we just checked the time and realized 60-some minutes into it. So that's a good drop-off point. And we are nowhere near complete with numbers, so hang tight and we'll get you on the next session.